the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, let's get another week underway. Our first full week of Flames Talk for the calendar year 2025. It is Monday, January 6th, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
Before we get started, just wanted to acknowledge the life and legacy of Chopper Al McNeil, who the Flames announced passed away over the weekend at the age of 89, a four-time Stanley Cup champion, a member of the Flames' 1989 Stanley Cup winning group as an assistant general manager, at times a head coach for the Calgary Flames, and just a mainstay around the rink over the last 40 years. This man went toe-to-toe with Jean Béliveau in the 1950s. This man then coached Jean Béliveau in his final year when Jean was just about to retire. What a story and an incredible life in hockey for Al McNeil. So just wanted to pass that along, and you and I in the second hour of the program going to spend a little bit more time on the life and legacy of Chopper, but just wanted to say that as we kick the show off, such a mainstay and always such a treat to see Chopper in the owner's box for a morning skate or for a practice. So rest easy, Al. That was some sobering news to get a number of hours ago on this Monday, but rest easy to Al McNeil, who passed over the weekend at the age of 89.
Yeah, and as you said, in the next hour, we'll get into sharing a couple stories, but first starters, just our sincere condolences to his family, his wife Norma, his wife of 58 years, his son Alistair, who is on the Flames scouting staff, and everyone else. Man, what a terrific man. Leaves behind so many smiles and so many stories, and our sincere condolences.
Yep. Just an incredible life, almost lived almost entirely in the game of hockey.
And I think you could say quite easily, nobody has been trying to impact the Calgary Flames for longer. I mean, Al McNeil moved north with the franchise. He was the original head coach of the Calgary Flames.
Like he's right there with, in terms of, people who have been associated with the organization since the very beginning days in this city, with Pep, Jim Poplinski.
Sure.
And two or three other people who have kind of been there the entire way. It's pretty incredible for 40 years to be associated with the Calgary and Atlanta Flames.
And as you said, it was not uncommon, even over these past few years, to see Chopper at morning skates or at practice in the owner's box. You'd see him all the time wandering out of the coach's office, and he was always welcome to go in there and share some of his observations of the game. And we're talking at this point about a guy who would have been 87 or 88 years old.
Yep.
Like this guy was a hockey lifer.
Yep.
Loved it, lived it. Just a really terrific man, as well respected as anybody in the game.
Well, very well said. So rest in peace, rest easy, Al McNeil. Flames Talk and Sportsnet 960 Calgary Flames Radio condolences to the McNeil family. And some more on Al a little bit later on in the second hour of this Monday edition of Flames Talk. Flames coming off a couple of difficult losses now. So for the first time since October, their first two losses of the season were consecutive regulation losses at the Scotiabank Saddledome, and they have not lost consecutively in that building since those losses to Carolina and Winnipeg. Remember the Winnipeg game where people were losing their minds over the call on Nazem Kadri that led to the power play goal late? That's the last time that the Flames have lost a game back-to-back or consecutive games on home ice in regulation up until Thursday and Saturday. And both these most recent ones of the very frustrating variety, they cough up the lead after 40 minutes of play and lose a game in regulation for the first time when leading after 40 on Thursday against Utah. And then Saturday against one of the two or three worst teams in the league, a 4-1 loss to Nashville. That was a night that looked like Daryl Sutter's final year, or even looked a little bit like last year. Tons of zone time, tons of shots, tons of pucks towards the net, but just the one goal. They never held a lead. And yeah, first time since October, the Flames have lost consecutive games in regulation on home ice. And yeah, some frustration with the way the last two games have gone for the Flames.
They were really strong in that first period Saturday against Nashville. And probably about 5 minutes into the second period, maybe not even that long, I turned to my post-media colleague, Danny Austin, who was sitting next to me in the press box and said, you know, what you can't do is allow a bad team and a tired team, because the Predators had played the night before in Vancouver, to hang around. Like, when you outplay a team that significantly in the first period, you need something to show for it. And one of the challenges with a scoring-starved team is that you'll have those games where it really should be, whatever, 2-rip, 3-rip after the first period, and yet you go to the intermission still tied, and kind of right off the hop in the second period, you could tell that the Nashville Predators got some momentum from that.
Yep, they survived, right?
As I know we'll get into, one Flame in particular handed them some more momentum a couple times, and suddenly they're off to the races. And it's a game that, if we're sitting here in April talking about a 2 or 3 point margin for a team that is really motivated to get into the playoffs, that's going to be one of those games that you look back and say, geez, we really needed that one.
Yep. Yep. You know, the Utah game was frustrating because it allowed the Utah to move a little bit closer. Now just 2 points back of the Flames with even games played. The Nashville one. There have not been a lot of games this year where, a couple of things. There haven't been a lot of games this year where the Flames have kind of been the better team over the balance of 60 and lost. For the most part, they've won the games they're kind of supposed to win and lost the games that they haven't played well in. And on this night, they got goalied a little bit. They couldn't bear down. They couldn't finish their opportunities. The penalty kill let them down in a big, big way. And obviously, as you mentioned, Andrei Kuzmenko, who we'll talk about in just a second, kind of really helped Nashville gain some momentum in that game. But there haven't been a lot of games like that this year where they've been the better group and still have found a way to lose. That was something that we saw a couple of years ago when we lamented over and over and over again. So there was that side of it that I think you come away frustrated in. And I lost my train of thought on the other part of it, so I'll get it back at some point. But you know, that is, there have not been a lot of games like that. Oh, the other part is that they haven't lost a lot of games to teams well below them in the standings. They've done a pretty good job. You know, that trend of the last number of years of coughing up points against bottom feeders, that's something that sank them last year, sank them 2 years ago. They haven't really run into that issue all that much this year. They've taken care of those teams for the most part, but obviously didn't on Saturday.
Yeah, and as I said, like, that's one that I think could haunt you a little bit moving forward. And this is a team that now, and we'll talk about it throughout the week, this was a team that needed to, I suppose, get its act together on the road already. And now, after dropping back-to-back in regulation on home ice, I would say that can't happen soon enough. Like, this is a team that, after dropping two in a row in their own building, really, really need some road success. And it just sort of adds, I suppose, a little bit of insult to it that it was the Predators, a team that you expect to, if you're a playoff hopeful, and the 30th place team, I think, comes into your building.
Yep.
You expect to win that hockey game. They're playing a backup goalie. They played the night before, whatever. You know, you can go up and down the list of reasons that a playoff hopeful needs to expect to win that hockey game on Saturday. And that's a frustrating one for the Calgary Flames to cough away.
The phone, not the phone lines, that's the post-game show. The text line's open. I'm not going to spring phone lines on you, I promise. The text line is open.
I was going to say, am I done for the day?
Yeah, you're out of here.
I just paid for parking.
The text line is open at 960-960 throughout this hour of Flames Talk. If you're listening live, jump in, 960-960. Dylan says, might be worth saying the Flames are only 4 points out of a top 10 pick. You know, that's kind of the interesting thing about the way this Western Conference and the overall standings look right now. The Flames are, what, 1 point out of a playoff spot with one more game played than Vancouver, and they're also only 4 points out of falling into that top 10. I mean, there's a lot of things that can swing one way or the other, so that's the situation the Flames find themselves in right now. Like, here, you think of Anaheim as a bottom dweller. We'll touch on this a little bit on the round table, but you think of Anaheim as a bottom dweller. They're only five back of the Flames, much like Utah was on Thursday, and Anaheim's playing some much better hockey of late. So that's no walk in the park on Saturday night in a place that now they play well in. There's not a whole lot separating some teams in this league right now.
And to just further illustrate your point, You mentioned that Anaheim's just 5 points behind the Flames. Well, those two teams in the overall standings at this moment are separated by 10 spots. You know, overall, the Flames are 15th right now and Anaheim's 25th, and yet we're talking about a 5-point difference. And I was having a conversation with someone the other day, like, I almost expect this thing to get more bunched up over the next few weeks going into the Four Nations.
Yep.
I really think I saw some comments. I can't remember where they were, but I saw a comment from Utah general manager Bill Armstrong saying, well, teams might have to decide a little earlier than usual if they're buying or selling because of the break. And I was having a conversation with someone at the rink about that, and they said, how are you going to decide? How's anyone, and they weren't referring to the Flames, but how's anyone going to decide? Look at the standings. It's an absolute chaotic mess. And I don't think that's changing over the next few weeks.
By the way, over at Money Puck, I like checking their playoff odds on a daily basis. They're fun to track. The Flames were, at some point after the Vancouver win, they were up over 40% to make it. Two losses at home, they dropped to under 16%. That thing swings wildly, so you know it's you can't buy into any one thing any given day. But I do find that interesting to see how things can swing on their playoff odds. Other sites and sources have their own different playoff odds. I just like Money Pucks because they take a lot of things into account when doing it, including expected goals. So
my favorite,
which is why I really like using them. I know how big an expected goals guy you are.
Yeah, I was actually expecting you to mention expected goals today.
So how are my expected goals mentions?
You know, last week I thought you kind of let me down a little, but you are off to a hot start with those expected goals.
This says, where are they with that first round pick to the Habs? What would you like to see as an outcome? Well, I don't control the outcome. Where are they right now? If the season ended today, this is the way things would look. Just obviously things could change, but if things were to end today, the Flames would be giving up the 15th overall pick. Or the 17th overall pick, something like that, because they're ranked 15th overall right now. The Flames would be giving up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. They'd be giving up the 17th overall pick to the Montreal Canadiens, and the Flames would then be drafting wherever Florida is.
Yeah. And that's all roughly because right now the Flames are in ninth in the Western Conference. So finishing out of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's also true.
It's too early. It's too early.
Way too early.
Maybe not too early to worry about. I certainly understand why some Flames fans are biting their nails about that pick that could potentially, or what pick will potentially be going to Montreal, but it's too soon to try and lock in numbers there.
For sure. Because Florida's only a few points ahead of them, but they would be giving up a pick to Montreal if it were to stand right now. But again, they're out of the playoffs. Wes is very correct. couple interesting things coming from Saturday's loss. We've talked a lot about Andre Kuzmenko. You and I spoke a lot about Andre Kuzmenko last week as he was trending towards getting back in the lineup. So we talked a lot about him on Friday. He returns to the lineup, and his fingerprints were all over that hockey game. Good yes. and bad. Yes. Good and bad. Is that a good way of saying it? His fingerprints all over it?
He finally got his name on the summary.
He sure did. He sure did. Not necessarily always in the bad way. So in the good way, rather. So on the one hand, Kuzmenko finishes with 8 shot attempts, a few scoring chances over at Natural Stat Trick, and he looked far more engaged offensively than he has, like, going back to October. Mm-hmm. So there was that positive side of things. On the other hand, 2 second period offensive zone penalties that cost the Flames power play goals against, or led to power play goals against. This was head coach Ryan Huska when Wes asked him postgame about how he would sum up Andre Kuzmenko's return to the lineup.
2 offensive zone penalties, and then the one thing I would say is a positive thing for him, he had a lot of shot attempts tonight, and that's something we've been asking of him.
So he definitely, on the offensive side of things, looked a whole lot better, looked a whole lot more like the guy you'd want to see. 8 attempts, that is through the roof from mm-hmm. him. I don't believe any of them got on net, but one got on net. Okay.
One.
So still has not gone over 2 shots on goal in a game all year, but at least he was taking the shots. He was playing aggressive.
Yeah.
But then he takes a slashing penalty in the O zone.
Hang on. Let's get to the penalties in a second, because I do want to say something nice first. And that's, there was a shift in the first period that I thought was maybe Andre Kuzmenko's best shift since the month of October. There was a shift where, and no shot attempts because he was below the goal line almost the whole time, but he steals the puck from a Predators defenseman. He makes a nifty little pass to Ryan Lomberg for a shot on net. Save gets made. Puck pops over the net. Kuzmenko grabs it again, passes it to Michael Backlund right away. Michael Backlund gets hooked, draws a penalty, and with a delayed penalty call still coming, Kuzmenko, still below the goal line, gets the puck back, comes out the other side of the net, and finds Brayden Bahal for another shot attempt, ultimately blocked. Like that sequence, it was about 10 seconds. I remember thinking to myself, I haven't noticed Andre Kuzmenko have that sort of impact since October. I was even going to write about that shift. I was that impressed. And then,
the
game continued happening. I'll let you pick up from there.
Well, okay. So here's what I like about the penalties that Kuzmenko took. He took the ozone slashing penalty. That was a slash.
Yes. That was a very obvious hack across the hands.
And yet less obvious than the second penalty.
Yeah, if we're ranking them, you're right.
In terms of the obviousness of them,
the slash was his better penalty.
Yeah, because the other one was, I just remember sitting there beside Logan upstairs in the press box, breaks his stick, and then I'm like, no, what are you doing? Yeah. No, you have a spear in your hand. Yeah. And then obviously the officials were like, nope, that's mm-hmm. every single time we're going to call that. And what I liked was like the Saddle Dome was booing, and like the Flames at first were a little incredulous about it. They're like, oh, no, okay, yeah, that's a rule. You can't do that.
Great work on the broadcast. They showed the Flames bench sort of immediately after, and I like to refer to it as blinking away disbelief. Just sort of,
And you know what? I don't mind them as much as I would have minded Kuzmenko getting back in, being flat-footed, taking a couple lazy penalties. Those were not lazy penalties.
No.
Those were over-engaged penalties where maybe the engagement overrides the brain for a second. So I'll take that over. Like, I would come away generally, and maybe I'm in the minority when I say this, but generally more positive about Kuzmenko's return than negative. Now, not 55-45, because he was engaged, he was trying, all those things came, but at the same time, two penalties, two power play goals against. Now, what I said on Flames Talk postgame many times on Saturday was also, how about you kill a penalty? That could help, you know, going 0-for-2 on the penalty kill and letting Nashville go 100% on their power play is maybe also not a winning formula. So you could kill a penalty too, but yes.
You're so nitpicky.
Those were momentum killers for Kuzmenko. Here he was postgame on Saturday, was asked about the penalty, and then a very intrepid follow-up from our Flames Talk fan member, Wes Gilbertson. This was Kuzmenko on the second penalty, which I haven't seen in a long time.
Emotional moment, because when I broke in stick, I see the puck a couple of meters from me, and my right hand is a stick go out, but this is the motion moment. I left hands as a save sticks, as pass to backs. Stupid moment, right? I have a mistake about penalty. Right. Okay, next time I understand the rules. Because I think before I don't can play broken sticks, but I think I stick out. Okay, yes, and the future.
So did you know that rule already, or did you learn that rule tonight?
Learn.
Okay, so that would, I believe, life experience. That's how.
Yeah, you know when they talk about those lessons that you sort of learn the hard way?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, buddy, and I don't know if you're the same. I've heard the same sentence from multiple people since the game on Saturday. I've heard multiple people just say, I felt really bad for Kuzmenko. And that goes back to what you were talking about. They were maybe over-engaged penalties. You could really see early on in that hockey game and even on the penalties how determined he was to make a positive impact in his return to the lineup. This is a guy who'd been scratched for 7 of the 8 previous games, who'd not played a whole ton of ice time in the one game he had played. We all know he hasn't scored a goal since the fourth game of the season. And so I heard that from a lot of people. I feel bad for Kuzmenko. And I get that. And I appreciate Andre Kuzmenko's honesty. And yet, if I'm a Flames teammate or a Flames coach or a Flames executive, I'm thinking, how did you get to the National Hockey League and not know that rule?
Yeah,
like,
I
it's
agree.
Actually, as obscure of a rule as it is, it's sort of one of the earlier things you learn in minor hockey, just because it's a safety thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's not be skating around with half a javelin in our hands. And I just think as the frustration mounts with Andre Kuzmenko internally, you know, you haven't scored a goal in 26 or whatever it's been games. You hadn't had a shot on net in 5 nights. We're paying you $5+ million. And now we lost a game. That was the game winning goal. We lost the game because you didn't know this rule? That's tough.
Yeah, it is. You keep him in the lineup for Tuesday in Anaheim?
Oh, that's a good question.
I do.
Yeah, I think I probably would. I mean, I'm sure you've had these same conversations that there's an acknowledgement that they need to get Andre Kuzmenko going. And it's twofold. One, he's a guy with a gift for creating offense. You wouldn't know it based on his stats this season, but he's a guy who is an offensively gifted player. And what does this team really need as they try to hang around in the playoff race? Offense, right? They need offense.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, we could go pay out the nose to try and get offense, or maybe we could get more out of that guy over there who's scored 39 one season in this league. So they're invested in getting more out of him that way. And they're also invested in hoping, maybe worst case or other case scenario, that he has some value at the trade deadline. And that certainly wouldn't be the case right now. I don't think you're willing to eat a whole bunch of salary to get what at this point would be a fairly late round selection. And so with that acknowledgement that they'd really like to get Andre Kuzmenko going, I do think this is an important time to show some confidence in him. I do think that's why head coach Ryan Huska sort of bit his tongue maybe a little bit post game the other night, you know, knowing that, hey, everyone out there is saying Andre Kuzmenko cost his team the game. All right, right? You took calls all night about it, I'm sure. The headline on story on the Post media sites, Kuzmenko's penalties cost Flames and lost to Predators, right? And that's all fair. It's all fair. If you're saying that Andre Kuzmenko's the reason they lost, I wouldn't argue with you. I said the same thing, and yet from an organizational standpoint, why pile on now? And I think that's why you leave him in the lineup.
And I also leave him in because he also showed a lot of promising signs. And they may have been wiped out by a couple of overzealous penalties.
Sure.
That he could have been helped out with a penalty kill on. But again, that's why I keep saying, like, I keep pushing back a little bit on firmly placing the goat horns on Kuzmenko. Did he contribute to what happened? Of course. But also, they only scored once against the 30th place team in the NHL.
Backup goalie as well.
Who got their backup in net. And they couldn't kill off one penalty against that third. So that's why I would keep him in, because I also thought he did some good things for the first time in a long time.
Uh-huh.
He also looked like there was a little bit of offensive impact in there.
Would you leave him on the fourth line, or you want to see him?
Yeah. I'd keep him there. I would keep him there. I really haven't been enamored with Dewar of late either. So it's not like you've got this guy that you know is going to come back in like a house on fire come Tuesday night either.
The I suppose other part that I'd take into consideration is that Martin Pospisil hasn't been terribly effective on the power play of late. Still continue to really like what he's brought in a lot of 5-on-5 situations to that line. But on the power play, he's probably not a guy who needs to be out there with the man advantage. And so you have an option of leaving Kuzmenko in that net front spot or wherever you think he's best suited. And so, I think you show some faith in him. I thought the other night was a brain cramp, as it turns out. And I don't think this makes it less frustrating for the Flames, but as it turns out, he didn't apparently know the broken stick rule. But I do think it's an important time to show some confidence in him, because if you don't now, you can kind of, like, this experiment might as well be done.
This reads, they didn't lose that game because of those penalties. They lost it because they couldn't kill a penalty and couldn't score a goal.
Did you send that yourself?
No, I didn't. You've been watching me right here.
You can't text
you've been
in to back up
me.
Your own points.
This says, I can guarantee you Tuesday's game, he'll be invisible once again. This from Dylan and Revy. He had a couple bad penalties, but I would still put him in and play him next game. You're talking about an offensively creative guy with fragile confidence on a team that cannot score. Show some confidence. Give him some confidence. Francesca writes, poor Kuzmenko, my goodness, after being in and out of the lineup, I'm not surprised he made a couple of rusty, boneheaded decisions. With the added pressure of knowing his time in the NHL is dwindling, it'll be pretty unexpected for him to show up in perfect or even good form. And finally, from Scott, who says, in 45 years watching hockey, I've literally never seen someone penalized in the NHL for playing with a broken stick. I thought that would be a rule that, regardless of where you come from or the language you speak or the amount of years you've played, if you're playing in pro hockey, you'd be very well aware of that rule. No, watching that game, all we could do was shake our heads with our mouths open. Unbelievable. That comes from Scott. I've seen it before. I think I've seen it twice with the same player as a member of the Flames.
Really?
I think I saw Renny Bork do it twice.
I thought Ryan Huska.
That's not trying to throw Renny under the bus if he's listening right now. But I do remember at least once, if not twice, that happening with Renny Bork. And if I remember correctly, one gave the opposing team, might have been Washington, gave him like a 9-minute power play or something like that because of all that went into it, if I remember correctly. But, you know, sometimes the memory doesn't serve
me properly. That's impressive. I thought Ryan Huska's comments, and so the weirdness of Saturday postgame, and I'm sure you explained this a little bit on the postgame edition of Flames Talk, but
Andre Kuzmenko went to do a workout post game, and so the media is waiting to talk to him, and the communication staff for the team, who are great at what they do, said, okay, you know, guys, it's going to be a little bit. Let's go do the press conference with head coach Ryan Huska. We'll come back and get Andre after. And so it's rare that the coach is speaking post game
before the
players, but Ryan Huska was asked, well, is it possible he didn't know the rule? And he said, well, he's been in the NHL a few years now. I'm sure he knows the rule, which sums up exactly what that text was saying, sums up what I was saying earlier. You know, I don't know how you play 500 pro games between the KHL and NHL and aren't aware of that rule. And yet, you know, I'll give Andre Kuzmenko some credit for being honest about what happened.
Yep.
Doesn't make the loss easier to swallow, I think, if you're the Flames, but I'll give him credit for the honesty for sure.
It's Pat and Wes, and just a quick shout out to Matt Coronato in his first NHL fight as well. So
did okay.
I thought he did just fine.
I mean, wasn't, you know, two guys who are never going to be sluggers, but I know we got to go to break, so I'll keep this really quick. Those guys in that locker room at the Saddle Dome love Matt Coronato. He's like the new little brother. They adore Matt Coronato. And to stick up for the captain in the regard he did the other night, that's only going to grow.
Yep, 100%. Pat, Wes, this hour of Flames Talk coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now time for a Monday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, you know, had a conversation, or a number of conversations, on Saturday's Flames Talk postgame. You know, Andre Kuzmenko was a big topic after taking the two penalties that, yes, led in part to a couple Nashville goals, including the game winner. However, on top of Kuzmenko taking those penalties, the Flames penalty kill failed to kill a penalty on Saturday. And once again, the NHL's 30th ranked penalty kill did not help the Flames and was a part in costing them a hockey game. And you know, I don't really expect any of us to have answers or solutions, but Wilsey, isn't it strange that after being such a strong penalty kill for the last half decade, we're now talking about one of the league's worst penalty kills at the same time as this power play has taken a step forward after being a struggling power play for the last 3-4 years, ever since Johnny and Matthew left. I mean, so you've got a power play that has struggled the last two seasons mightily, and now it takes a step forward, but at the same time, the penalty kill takes a significant step back. I guess that's just the way this sport goes sometimes, eh?
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to explain why things happen, and the bigger sample size you have, I guess the easier it is to try to figure those types of things out. But I'll start with the penalty kill. I mean, it is surprising that it's taken such a big step back. I mean, they finished ninth in the NHL in penalty kill percentage last season. And as you pointed out, they're 30th in the league in PK percentage this season. It's been more than a 10% drop, which is massive. And I've been thinking more about it since our conversation post-game a couple of nights ago. And I really think the easiest explanation and the biggest reason why they've taken a step back is simply personnel. I mean, you lose Elias Lindholm, who is a right-handed centerman, to give you somebody to take draws on the strong side. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but going into the last game, Michael Backlund had taken around 130 shorthanded faceoffs. The guy who was second on the team had taken 20. I mean, so basically he's taking almost every single face-off when the team is on the penalty kill. He's a left-handed centerman. If you had a right-handed guy to take strong side draws, maybe you win more of those face-offs and are able to clear the puck down the ice, and you force the other team to spend 15, 20, 25 seconds trying to re-enter the zone. So that certainly would help the penalty kill. You also subtract a guy who I think is the best penalty-killing blue liner in the NHL in Chris Tanev. So you subtract Lindholm, you subtract Tanev. I think to a lesser extent, you subtract Noah Hanifin, who turned himself into a really good 200-foot defenseman who could play on both sides of special teams if you needed him to. And I think that's the simplest way to explain why the Flames have fallen back on the PK. Does it explain why they've fallen back 10%? Probably not. But again, I'm not paid the big bucks like the coaches are to try to figure that out. So that's my way of explaining it. As far as the power play is concerned, for me, the biggest reason why the Flames have taken a step forward this season, and it really goes back to the end of last season, although the factors late last season, I say, were probably a little bit different. Andre Kuzmenko comes in. He gives you a really good down-low presence, a little different skill set. And then Mackenzie Weegar, at the time, was on his way to his first career 20-goal season and doing a really good job getting pucks through from the point. This season, for me, it's the bounce-back campaign that Jonathan Huberdeau has had. And what really changed the Flames' fortunes on the PP, at least in my opinion, because they weren't good in the first 18 games and they've been quite good ever since, is that Jonathan Huberdeau and, to a lesser extent, Martin Pospisil have done a really good job getting to the front of their opponent's net. And that's created some chaos, screens, tips, rebounds. So for me, that's the biggest reason why the Flames' PP has been better of late. But special teams is so important. And when you go 0-for-5 on special teams, like the Flames did a couple of nights ago, it's going to be tough to win games.
Yeah, to have surrendered now, a power play goal in 6 in a row. That's their longest quote-unquote streak of the season. It's their second, what I would call, really bad rut that this power or that this penalty kill, I'm sorry, has been in. I like the point Willsie made about the face-offs. I was quickly looking it up, Derek, as you were talking. So Michael Backlund has taken 153 draws while shorthanded this year. He's won 60 of them, so 39.2%. Yeah. And that's not to sewer Michael Backlund, who will quietly tell you that he really misses having a right-handed shot out there to take those face-offs on one side of the ice. But if you're essentially losing 60% of your face-offs when the other team's on the man advantage, then you're giving them a lot of opportunity to start to sauce it around, and you could be going 30 or 40 or 50 seconds without a clear. Like you're seeing a penalty kill that isn't very often getting that immediate clear that puts the other power play on their heels and you know, helps you sort of establish some momentum. The one thing that I find, guys, to be sort of a little bit puzzling with the whole thing is that one of Ryan Huska's greatest strengths as an assistant coach was his work on the penalty kill. Like the head coach certainly knows the keys to success while shorthanded. And yet, you know, this is a team that hasn't been able to figure it out and hasn't been able to keep it figured out. We even heard Ryan Huska say just after the holidays that they're going to give those duties to interim assistant coach Trent Cull sooner than later. And anytime you're sort of mixing and matching who's running the special teams units mid-season, you're kind of searching for answers. And so the one thing that is not a secret to anybody is that if the penalty kill is ranked 30th in the league, you can kind of forget about the other stats, right? That's not going to get it done. The one thing I'll say on the power play before I throw it over to Pat is I think the smartest thing that they've done is kind of create two balanced units. Like there, you would have that PP1 out there for 90 seconds before, and even when they were floundering because it was all of the biggest names or the high profile guys, you knew they were going out first on the next power play and they were going to get another 90 seconds. And I really do think that two balanced units has created some internal competition that they've been able to feed off of.
West basically took everything I had to say. So I think that I can just wrap up the round table. I was excited to throw out.
Do you want
those...
just sing songs or something now?
Yeah, I think we could do that. No, I first of all, the face-off thing on the penalty kill is fascinating when you really go and take a look. So now Michael Backlund's taken 133 more shorthanded face-offs than anybody else on the team. He was the only guy to take a shorthanded face-off on Saturday, for instance. I'll just reiterate the biggest thing for me on the power play, on top of Emmett Kadri continues to be a threat. And Huberdeau's resurgence has been a massive part of it. And so is the fact that they've now got two units they're comfortable with and don't really have. Like, Huberdeau and Kadri have been great together at 5-on-5. They don't even play together on the power play, except when it's 5-on-3. So that gives you an idea as to just how spread out things have gotten when it comes to their higher-end talent at 5-on-4. So I think that's been a huge, huge reason for it, too. But you know, the shorthanded thing is so bizarre because I agree wholeheartedly. You take away Lindholm, Tanev, Hanifin. That's a big hit on what is, and all of those guys for the most part have been a giant part outside of Tanev, who wasn't there in 18-19 or 19-20. Those guys have all been mainstays on the penalty kill for the Flames under Ryan Huska as an assistant coach. So that obviously takes a hit, and yet, you know, you're still talking about Mackenzie Weegar, Rasmus Anderson, Kevin Ball, all getting significant penalty kill time on defense. And we're still talking about Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman as constant penalty killers at forward. So it's like the personnel for sure, but I wonder why the personnel who have taken over have had such a hard time filling those shoes, because it doesn't feel like it should be this much of a drop off, and yet it has been. And that's otherwise, I don't really have like a true answer. I can tell you, like, teams have far too easy a time winning faceoffs, and I think we understand why, with the lack of a right shot faceoff option for the most part. Teams have far too easy a job entering the zone on the power play against the Flames, which is something that has not been a part of their DNA the last number of years. And the cross seam pass has been way too easy to execute if you're opposing power plays. So those are the kind of whats. I just don't know the why. I don't understand why what I still think are some good penalty killing personnel members haven't been able to, like, if you wanted to tell me the Flames would have a slight drop on the PK Wilsey with the personnel turnover, yeah. But this much of a drop, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around why that's been the case. I don't have an answer for it. I'm definitely not that smart, but that's been the biggest confusing part for me.
Yeah, Lindholm and Tanev are huge losses on the PK. Again, Michael Backlund's had to take almost every single shorthanded faceoff. He's a left-handed faceoff man, so you know, the other team's going to more often than not choose to have the faceoff on the right side to put him at a disadvantage. So I think that's been a big part of it. You know, if you could have a guy like Elias Lindholm and make it more difficult for the other team to pick a side, then I think that helps your cause. You know, Chris Tanev just was so good on the penalty kill, just an absolute elite penalty killer. So you miss him for sure. Noah Hanifin, yes. And even Jacob Markstrom, you know, having a veteran goaltender, and I haven't looked at the save percentage for Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar in the PK this year to compare them to where Jacob Markstrom was over the last number of years, but that might be an interesting assignment as well. So that is probably the biggest part of it for me. I do wonder about the coaching, and I brought that up post-game a couple of nights ago, Pat. Yeah. So you go from Ryan Huska being in charge of the penalty kill and the PK being one of the best in the league for a number of years to him being hired as head coach, handing it off to Dan Lambert. And then last offseason, you know, the Flames had the number 9 PK in the league last year. They bring in Brad Larsen as the lead assistant coach, give him the penalty kill, and now he's on a personal leave. So now they're in a transition mode again, going from Ryan Huska kind of taking it over on an interim basis to them giving it over to Trent Cole at some point in time. So there's been a lot of change as far as the coaching staff is concerned when it comes to the penalty kill. So that could be a factor as well. But for me, you win with Jimmies and Joes and not X's and O's, isn't that the old saying? More, maybe more a football saying than a hockey saying. But I do think that there's something to that. You take away Lindholm and Tanev, and that's going to make your life more difficult on the PK.
That could be their problem. Do they have any Jimmies?
No Jimmies or Joes.
One Joe. Jonathan Huberdeau actually goes by Joe.
Not Joey.
Yeah, well, I think we got to the bottom of it, boys. More Jimmies.
Bring back James Neal.
No, you didn't. Wow. No, you didn't.
Jimmy the Gun,
no,
let's go.
No, you didn't.
No, I take it back. It's the Daily Flames Roundtable. Willsey, Wes, and Pat on this Monday. Guys, the Flames on the road for a quick two-gamer. They've actually got 8 of their next 10 away from the Saddle Dome, which will be an interesting test. But two straight on the road. Anaheim Tuesday, then into L.A. for an 8:46 puck drop on Wednesday night. Anyway, we can lament that off the air. But the Anaheim Ducks are next up. Firmly in the Western Conference, no longer firmly, rather, in the Western Conference basement. There's been a Ducks team that for the last number of years you could kind of pin in to be kind of in the 14, 15, 16 range in the West. And now they're only 5 back of the Flames entering action Tuesday. That's where Utah was on Thursday night. Utah's now just 2 back of the Flames. And I'm not suggesting that Anaheim is has graduated to where they want to go, but you know, for the longest time under this rebuild with Pat Verbeek at the helm, we've wondered when the hell is this Ducks team ever going to take a step with some of the impressive young talent they've got. I'm not suggesting they've made a massive leap or a massive jump, but I do wonder, guys, like, are we finally seeing the slight step on that staircase for the Anaheim Ducks? Like, is this a team that has finally started to climb their way out of the basement? And what Brian Burke always said during a rebuild, you got to crawl, then you got to walk, then you got to run. Like, are we moving towards the Ducks maybe being a team that can walk a little more regularly?
Potentially. It's just a little surprising to me kind of how they got to being a little bit better. I don't think they're a lot better. I think they're a little bit better. If you take a look at their top 4 point producers, they're all 27 or older. And I think 2 of the 4 are over 30. So it hasn't been these high first-round picks who have kind of carried the load for the team. I mean, they've got some good young players. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what Trevor Zegras is. He's got a lot of skill, but it feels like he's getting worse and worse by the year. And Mason McTavish is a good player, but, you know, he's just been so-so as far as his offense or production is concerned. I do think they've probably found their goaltender of the future in Lucas Dostal. So that certainly puts them in a good position. They've got a guy in John Gibson who I think teams will be after between now and the trade deadline. And maybe he can add another asset, whether it be a prospect or a pick or maybe a combination of the two things if you move him out. But it hasn't been the young guys who they went into a rebuild the draft and develop and to be the future of their franchise. It's been some older guys. And I know that you have to have a mix. You can't have a team full of young players and expect them to be competitive. You've got to have a good mix of youth and experience. And, you know, I look at their roster and, you know, even them adding Jacob Trouba, there's another guy who is a little bit older, who's got experience and can help those young guys along. But, you know, I kind of thought by this point in time in the rebuild, some of their younger players would have emerged to become more important players for them. That really hasn't been the case, at least not yet.
It might be happening, though, right? Because, you know, Willsey, you mentioned that the top 4 scorers on the team, and that's Troy Terry, Frank Vetrano, Ryan Strome, and Alex Killorn are all, I think you said, 27 or older. But,
yeah,
you know, if you go past them, it's Cutter Gauthier, Jackson Lacombe, Mason McTavish, Leo Carlson. I think the oldest guy on that list is probably 23 years old. And so they're certainly getting that push from some of the younger guys. I was sort of, you know, when Pat mentioned the topics today to me, I was a little disappointed because this would be an easier one for me to answer, you know, in a couple days after I've seen the Ducks. As recently as a couple weeks ago when they made the Cam Fowler trade, I was thinking to myself, what are they doing? Like, what are they doing? And so now to proclaim that the rebuild is taking steps, I'm not sure that I'm ready to do that. But if you look at, they've won 4 of 6 since the holiday break. And if you look at the teams they've beat, New Jersey, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Tampa, like, those are not freebie opponents that they've been beating. And so I think they're serving notice that they could be turning the corner. I just don't know if it's maybe too early to say that.
You know, it's it feels like maybe they're not the full-on also-ran they've been. Like, that's the only, and again, I'm not suggesting the rebuild's done. I'm not suggesting that they're going to be a powerhouse next year or anything like that. I mean, if I were to compare rebuilds and say which one would I rather have right now in California, I would probably take San Jose's all day. I just think Celebrini, Smith, and what they've got going on there. I think San Jose's, and you add in Askarov. I don't know. I probably look at it and say to myself, hey, I think I'd probably take San Jose's rebuild and future over Anaheim's. But, you know, I really like that trade they made to bring in Cutter Gauthier, and I think they've got themselves a high-end star down the road. And I think Leo Carlson is going to eventually emerge as a pretty close to a point-per-game player in this league. I think Olin Zellweger and Jackson Lacombe are really, really nice pieces to have on the back. I mean, Olin Zellweger's playing full-time on defense in Anaheim at the age of like 21. Good Southern Alberta product, by the way. Good Calgary kid. But I do think there are some promising things that are finally starting to bear a little bit of fruit in Anaheim. And I do think eventually this happens with all teams that they get a little bit better. I mean, Buffalo was awful for the longest time. And, you know, over the last number of years, they've been a little bit more competitive. Same thing with Detroit. They've been a little bit more competitive. The question now, Wilsey, is, okay, the Ducks have made themselves a little bit more competitive, and they're not just a walk in the park. They're not just a penned-in bottom-of-the-Western Conference team. But, like, how do they go from being a little bit better to clearly being in the playoffs? And that's the part that we don't know yet, if you ask me.
Here's a question for you guys. I just thought of it while you guys were talking. So if you're trying to rebuild, in order for that rebuild to be successful, do you have to get a generational player or at least a franchise player? Because you talked about the Sharks rebuild. They get Macklin Celebrini. He looks like he is going to be at least a franchise player and maybe even a generational player. The Blackhawks get Connor Bedard. Now, he should be a generational player. And I look at some of these other rebuilds. They drafted a lot of good players, even really good players, but didn't get that franchise or generational guy. Do you have to get that guy in order for a rebuild to truly be successful?
It's a great topic to jump in on. It may be a little late for 4:57 on to get too in depth in. But I will say I don't know, because I think of some of the teams that have won cups and that have maybe gone through that rebuilding process. Like, are Taves and Kane generational? Or
Kane 100%.
Or is Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, are those guys generational? I you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying they are or they aren't, but are the generational guys Crosby, McDavid, and Bedard? Or do the McKinnons and Celebrinis and Kucherovs and Canes also count in the... I don't know. That's a really interesting question we should dive in on one day.
Fair. But those guys are all franchise players, high-end franchise
players. Yeah, that is very true, for sure.
Yeah, so do you need to get one of those guys? I guess is my question. We can talk about that another day since we have 30 seconds left.
I do think getting one of those franchise players is key to have a successful rebuild. That I do think, and I don't know. Is Cutter Gauthier that? Is Leo Carlson that? I don't know.
Not yet.
Stay tuned.
So, look at that. Great way to wrap up the roundtable from Radio Veteran.
I'm glad
Wes
you could get your two words in there, Wes.
Yeah. just cashing paychecks over here, Wellesley. Stay tuned, buddy. Stay tuned.
Big paycheck.
I talk too much is the problem.
No, never enough. Bye, Wellesley. We'll see you. I'll talk to you on Tuesday. Thank you, pal.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Sham. Thanks to Cam, our outstanding producers. And that's the Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.